One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
What's up, everybody? Ryan Sickler here, and I just wanted to let you know that tickets to my fall dates of the Live and Alive tour are on sale now. Go to RyanSickler.com, get your tickets to all shows. I'm coming to Austin, Dallas, La Jolla, Salt Lake City, Denver, Chicago, Detroit, Minneapolis, Madison, Portland, Fort Lauderdale, Tampa, and Tempe. Tickets for all shows are available right now on my website at RyanSickler.com.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it in the Night Pants Studios. I am Ryan Sickler, RyanSickler.com, and Ryan Sickler on all your social media. And I'm here to say what I say at the start of all of these. Thank you. Thank you very much. Whatever you do to support whatever I do, thank you. I don't care if it's a shirt, an email, a subscribe, whatever. Thank you so much. It's because of you I get to do this, and I love doing this show. Make sure you come see me on tour, all right? Tickets are up now for my fall dates of the Live and Alive tour. You can get all tickets for all shows on my website at RyanSickler.com. And if you got to have more, then I'm telling you, you got to have the Patreon. We've been doing this Patreon for a couple years now. It grows every month. It's $5. We're never raising it, at least for now. And... It's been that way for years. It ain't going to be raised like that for 2024, okay? But it's this show with y'all, man. You guys have the craziest story. I talk about it all the time. We just had a dude call who had his hand amputated like the day before the call, and he's got it wrapped up, and he's calling us from his hospital bed telling us everything about what it feels like and what it used to be, pictures, the whole nine. I'm telling you, it's the craziest stuff. It's $5, and you're getting the Honeydew a day early. You're getting it ad-free. At no additional cost. All right, that's it. That's the biz. You guys know what we do here. We highlight the lowlights, and I always say these are the stories behind the storytellers. I am very excited to have this guest on. First time here on The Honeydew. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Hannah Berner. Welcome to The Honeydew.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Sorry, I was just signing up to your Patreon. That sounded really enticing. I was like, I want to learn about nubs. Whatever's going on.
I'm telling you, it's the craziest stories you'll ever hear in your life. It's insane, because you can imagine, like I say all the time, like it's awesome, it's wonderful to sit down and talk to comedians like yourself, mm-hmm. who have a brand new Netflix special out, but also actors, athletes, whatever. But these regular people out there, they call in and I'm like, what? And they tell us stories that none of us can cover, and I leave here often thinking I'm doing all right. You know what I mean? I'm doing
life
all
is
right.
About perspective. And we're comics, we're spicing things up. It didn't happen the way we say it.
Exactly.
These people are real.
Oh, they're
That's
crying.
Raw. That's why I watch documentaries. I don't want this fake shit.
That's right. There's no hyperbole in fucking Billy's story, you know?
No, my shit has been manufactured to be entertaining.
Yeah. Before we get into your story, please promote everything you'd like.
Oh, yeah. So my first Netflix special is out right now. It's called We Ride at Dawn. And I have a podcast with my husband, Burner Phone, where people call in. Actually, honestly, people are so much more entertaining. I'm sick of myself. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear myself talk anymore. Tell me about
it's
you.
It's their show.
And then let me comment on it to make myself giggle. And I do have a podcast with my best friend called Giggly Squad. We talk a lot. That's what we do. And yeah, I'm just so excited to be here. Talk shit.
And your special.
Yep.
It's streaming now on Netflix.
Check it out.
I told you before coming in, like, I don't know, you see all these specials with these introductions and some of them are like 3 minute like clips,
like you've never like, seen her before. She's silly, she's spicy, wild.
She's wacky.
There's a sparkly blazer,
she's on Netflix.
She's dirty and she only does sex jokes, you know who it is.
The worst shit ever.
And then it's just like a quarter of the bit or like just the beginning of the premise. So you're always like, did they bomb the whole time? No, I fucking hate trailers. And
they want you to pay an exorbitant amount of money to have these companies do this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And yours, I loved it.
Thank
like,
you.
I immediately was like, fuck yeah.
Thank you.
Like you look excited. Mm-hmm. It's a look over your shoulder that just says everything. You know, I feel like it just gets your personality out there. You're excited. Mm-hmm. You're excited to go out there with them. It just looks like, come on and have a good fucking time instead of all this fucking dumb nonsense.
Jazz
it's the
hands.
Best. Like, oh my God, do you believe this shit?
I come
everybody?
From like a sports family and I love like getting pumped up. Like I'm that person, like I want to be on the bench being like, yeah, shoot the three. So I wanted to feel like I was a boxer, like about to go on. But I do feel also like once you get to like a Netflix or like creating something, people want you to pay other people to
of course
do your stuff. And I'm like, I feel like why would I pay people who don't know my story, who I am, to create a trailer that defines my hour? I'm like, just let me fuck around and do it in, you know, Photoshop, figure something out.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that you liked
loved
my
it.
10-second trailer.
Well, look, I come from the producer world too. Yeah. Like my whole day jobs while I was doing comedy was working in production. So that's why I know how to do these things and stuff like that.
You're better at your job too when you know what's behind it.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of editing, like video editing. Mm-hmm. And it definitely has helped my career, being able to be like cutting up little clips and stuff like that. So
well, good for you.
Woman in STEM.
Tell me about your family. You come from a sports family. I see you wearing Knicks here. So you New York?
Can you tell I like sports? I'm wearing Knicks jersey. No, I am from Brooklyn, New York.
You are? Okay.
I am. Are you from the South?
I get that a lot.
You've got a draw on you.
I'm from Maryland. I'm from Baltimore.
Oh, okay.
And I got a little bit of a draw.
Yeah.
Which I say all the time. I had no idea.
I feel like you're putting it on because you've been in LA for a while now.
I sound like, in my head... I sound like you sound, okay?
You're and like, when I sound I like a Midwest
here,
reporter.
People would be like, are you from Texas? Are you from out? I'm like, what? No. Like, you draw
You want to go hunting?
And then I'm like, oh. And then you start listening to more, and you hear, like, Stavi do the real accent. And it's like, you know what? Turn on the GoPro. I'm going to shoot something and upload it to Hulu and Tubi.
Yeah.
Like, that's a real hardcore ball.
So what
accent.
Are you?
You're
just
funny.
Tired.
I'm tired.
You're just drunk
One dude
and tired.
Told me,
you just sound drunk.
I had the face. He said, Ryan Sound, he said, I always fuck it up. If an afternoon nap had a face, it's Ryan Sickler's fucking face. And I was like, that's fucking good, dude.
No, I like you have good energy. Like, I came in, I was running late. I was like, this guy's going to be fucking pissed. We're going to have an awkward conversation. You came in, you're like, let's chill out.
Yeah.
We don't have to start yet. You have very good vibes.
Well, because you said this was your last one. If you did, I'd be like, let's hustle. Let's go.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you got to pet the dog and we talked about what we're going to
talk
about.
Yeah, we had some pet emotional pet therapy.
So you're basketball Knicks. What are you, football and hockey and
baseball? You know, I had a weird family. It's really not that weird. Half of them were like Giants, the other half Jets, half Yankees, half Mets.
Okay.
So there was issues.
All New York teams.
All New York teams. Mm-hmm. But there was some tension in the household at a young age. Walls were punched. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, I had two different sides of the family because one was Italian, one was like whatever, Mutts. But yeah, I loved sports. And I had a dad who was very like, the way to win at life is to like play a sport for like your career. Like you're playing a game.
Oh.
He's like, if you play a game and make money from it, you win at life. Like that was the perspective. And I was like athletic at a young age. And he was kind of like, we can do this. So
really?
it was fun. But like I had a creative side that I suppressed for so long when I became a tennis player and I played for University of Wisconsin, Go Badgers.
That's fucking awesome. Yeah. So, you were athletic young, like mm-hmm. all your sports, you just stood.
I was
you were
like
that one.
I was like that girl who's like a little
else.
Weirdly fast.
Yeah,
and I would just like run around. Mm-hmm. They're like, she's hyper, but she's scoring goals. At like 11 years old, I remember coaches sat me down like, she needs to pick a sport if she wants to go professional. Like it was that kind of stuff. And I think as a kid, it's really fun, but it definitely fucks with you. Where like you realize early on, like, oh, when I win, people like me. And if I, and that's where I got my value from. Like, oh, when I'm winning, everything's good in the house. If I'm losing, I'm a fucking
loser. God forbid I lose and God Giants forbid lose. I lose anything. Holy shit's gonna get fucked.
I feel like it's like hot people who are like, everyone likes them because they're pretty. And then when they start get aging, yeah, they get scared because they're like, what am I?
What do I have now?
So I just like leaned in. I was, tennis was my thing. That was my ego.
So can I ask you this? Because it's also interesting. I'm thinking about it as well, paralleling it to like child actors.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're going into this thing and this is it. Not only are you entering it now, this is what you're going to do for life. This is what's going to set you up, have a career, all these
things.
At
8 years old, my parents asked a coach, like, do you think she could be like a professional tennis player? And the coach was like, you know, I think she's starting kind of late. I don't know if it's possible.
At eight.
They tell me this. I don't know why they told me. They told me, apparently I cried all day. Like, what a little psychopath. And I was like, I'm now going to prove you wrong and I need to become a professional tennis player. I mean, I guess I had some kind of crazy drive at a young age, but like I loved greatness. I love the idea of like doing things that people didn't expect from you. I don't know. I had that and I loved making my dad proud of me. So, I mean, it was a recipe for a type A overworked, you know, hustling kid.
So at eight, is that when you shift into tennis? Like, seriously? And what are you doing? Are you going to camps? Are you doing
I'm doing the camps. 24/7? I'm doing, and the thing is too, with the pressure of it is like my parents, like I didn't come from money.
Mm-hmm.
So like at the time you're just like, oh, my parents are helping me with this. They're like investing their hard-earned cash to give me tennis lessons as a nine-year-old.
Hannah, my daughter's nine now in gymnastics. And I'm it's $3,500 for what? Two leotards.
For her to tumble around?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
She's fall off the fucking, for her to twist her ankle?
That's what I'm like. I'm like, what?
A cartwheel?
Will you get a photo too? I could do that on my phone. Like, what are you talking about?
Literally. It's so, and you don't know as a kid, you're just like, oh, I have to go practice. But I loved practice. But from an early age, I realized like, when you're winning, like everyone's happy. And by 14, I was ranked like top 10 in the nation.
Damn, really?
I was out here in the streets hustling.
And are you staying in high school or at that point are you in like a program or what happens then?
So I got sent off. I did get sent off. They have that moment where they're like, you're in New York. If you want to compete with the best, you have to go to Florida because they're playing all year round. Mm. And I went to a tennis academy where we played 6 hours a day and then went to the gym at night. And I was like running in the morning. And that's where like stuff got a little too much for me. Cause I'm, you know, your brain's not fully formed. You're 15. You have no clue what's going on in the world. And I was alone and I was changing my grip, like different technique was being changed. And it all hit me. And I just felt like way too much pressure. And I started to have like pretty bad performance anxiety.
What happened?
Like before going on the court, getting dizzy, being scared to hit certain strokes, but like still figuring out how to win. But like tennis is a hilarious game because you'll see people lose their mind on the court. Like it's the one sport people are breaking things, mm-hmm. yelling at themselves, yelling at the refs. It's because you can't call timeout. You can't pass the ball. You can't talk to your coach to calm down. Tennis is you battling yourself, which you can argue stand-up is a little similar, but I just remember feeling like overwhelmed and a disappointment because I was letting the pressure get to me. And then I asked my parents, I said, I want to go home. So I went home and I went back to school and I joined a public school that just had a boys team. And like Title IX says, if you don't have a girls team and the girl who plays, she has to be able to at least try out for the boys team. I remember my dad said to me, he goes, you can quit right now. He's like, fuck all this bullshit. I remember we're on the court and my dad was like, you can quit and I will love you. And he like hit me a ball and I was like, get me back in there. So I joined the boys team.
Wait, let me ask you this. At this time, you're 15.
Yeah.
What's your strength? What's your best serve?
I had a really good backhand. And I was really fast. Like, I could get to everything.
Moving around fast.
Yeah. And I also was, like, I I would play mind games. Like if I saw something annoyed her, I would just keep doing it. So I was good at competing, but I also was like fighting my own self while trying to, because sometimes you're like, okay, I have insecurities about my game, but she has more insecurities about her game. So it was a lot of like problem solving, but at the end of the day, I didn't realize I actually didn't like competing.
No.
No,
you just
I
like
loved
pleasing
practicing.
Your dad and making people feel happy and
yeah, caretaking. And I did like the performance aspect of being like, look at these shots I could hit.
What was your fastest serve?
Good question. I mean, I probably could hit like 120.
Damn,
I have like a good arm. I'm like, I'm not like a huge server, but back in the day,
I'm fucking ducking. I wouldn't even try to return your serve. I'd be this guy. Quit fucking around. You know, give me that half speech.
It is. It's funny. There's a lot of guys, like even in college,
like, what the fuck are you
the
doing?
Football guys would be like, I could play you in tennis. I go, I will fucking drill the ball down your throat. And it was fun. It was it was crazy.
Were you good enough? I always wonder this, to fuck up your first serve on purpose just to try to play and see what's going to happen so that you and know you could get that second one over? Without a fault. You know what I'm saying? Am I asking it right?
People say, if you know tennis at all, you're only as good as your second serve.
Mm.
So the second serve is the one that...
That's the one you pay attention to.
You can't miss. Mm-hmm. And if it breaks down, you lose the point. So like you could see people with all these great forehands, backhands. If their second serve is weak, that's like the strength of their game. But tennis is crazy because... Yeah, there's the variables of, you know, oh, that player has a huge forehand. I have to hit it to their backhand. Oh, I don't feel comfortable serving to the backhand. And it reminds me of stand-up, how, like, you have your jokes, but you're like, okay, we have a person throwing up over there. And, like,
got a heart attack down here.
This is my, like, third show. I'm fucking tired. And I guess I have that familiarity. Then you got someone heckling, like, telling them their life story. I'm like, I don't care that it's your fucking birthday. And so I feel like the stuff that I hated about tennis, I found didn't happen in comedy. But then I find similarities that I'm like, oh, I actually feel like familiar with this. But tennis, I was really mean to myself. Like when I messed up, I was like, you stupid dumb bitch cunt. Where stand up.
This is what you're saying to yourself when you mess up, you would, huh?
Oh, I remember like I would try not to curse in front of people. And then on the court, I'd be like, fuck shit. And I was so mad. Little 14-year-old girl would be like, you fucking asshole, fucking ball sucking motherfucker. And I'm literally like, hi. But I try.
I'm Hannah from the Bronx.
Hi, nice to meet you guys. Fucking suck in the butt. Just smash your rackets. But with comedy, I was like, I'm doing it because of me. I don't have my parents paying for anything. I don't have coaches. I don't have a team's pressure. I said, I can choose how I speak to myself after a set. And once I realized that I don't have to be mean to myself, like, it changed my life. That you don't have to.
Nope.
It's perspective.
You don't have to beat yourself up. You don't have to be homeless and go through a struggle. You just got to be. You got to love your motherfucking self. But it takes a while to get there. It takes breaking rackets and calling yourself a dumb cunt.
Being
when you're
in the dark place. 100%. And once
you
I realized,
have to
like,
sit in your own shit for a while, figure it out, then get up and move forward.
And the most fucked up part about it is that like it's actually been in you. You're like going to all these external things like, well, if I mean, obviously therapy is good, but you're like, if I change this and if I do this and if I ice bath and if I fucking
breath work,
when it's like you actually, it starts with you just deciding for a second, let's not call ourselves an asshole for a second. And then you realize, oh, I could choose happiness. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, no, I
think about that too, because I look in the mirror and what I do when I look in the mirror
you're
is
like, you look
critique
tired.
Myself.
Like, open your fucking
you look like
eyes.
You needed that, motherfucker. I look bags under my eyes, all of it. I never walk in the mirror. I shouldn't say never because I try to make myself, but I could probably count them on one hand.
You have a nice tan.
Thanks. I'll say that to myself later. When I walk in the mirror and I say, you look nice today. I never do that.
But it's funny because that energy, not to get all woo-woo LA because I'm a New Yorker, but that energy, like people sense it. Like, if you talk to yourself good in the mirror, they feel that radiating off you. And next thing you know, like, things change around you. And I really think with tennis, I was so negative and it did affect how I would play. They say, like, the best athletes have, like, more, after they mess up, they more quickly have positive thoughts than an athlete who's not as successful. So they're able to, like, fuck up and then in 3 seconds be like, focused on the next point.
All right, we know better than that. Let's go.
Yeah. Pick it up. Instead of being like, I knew this would happen.
Right.
You fucking
suck.
There it's going to happen again.
You dumb fuck. You did it again.
And I don't know how people get to that, but I think with stand-up, I try to be like, whatever happens, I'm like, oh, wow, we learned. We learned. I'm proud of you. We learned on stage. Where I would never do that with tennis. With tennis, I'm like, you dumb bitch wasting your parents' money.
Wasting your parents'
you stupid dumb bitch.
So when do you realize you're going to go D1 and do you have a ton of opportunities?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I did have fun on the boys team. We ended up like.
Yeah. Tell me about that. Were you kicking their ass and stuff too?
The guys on the team were so funny because I was an international player and most high school teams, like these guys aren't playing the extent that I'm playing. So like I actually kind of was, I should be beating them, but these guys would go on the court and the guys on my team would be like, hey, take it easy on the girl. Take it easy on her. Like they loved joking with it. And I was winning a lot. There was like a New York Times article about it because some people were mad that I was playing on the boys team. They thought it like wasn't fair. And the cutest thing about it is when I graduated, they created a girls team that my dad coached.
Oh, so that is cute. That's
it was a
nice.
Disney movie.
Where's that script out in the fucking... That's next Netflix.
I was like, Dad, don't yell at these girls, okay? Be nice to them.
That's
but,
nice.
He's a coach. So when I went to college, it was again like, I want to go pro. But going pro in tennis it's kind of fucked up because unless you have like a big sponsorship because you're ranked really high, you only get paid when you win. You have to pay for your own travel.
Is that right?
You have to pay for your coaches. Like, if you're the 600th ranked tennis player in the world, you're not making money. You have to be like top 100. And like the top 600th, not to make this an ESPN podcast, but top 600th football guys doing pretty well.
Listen, we're a fan of Michael Costa out there who also Shout out Michael Costa, who also was a pro tennis player.
And
I forget
what
he was
grind.
Ranked.
He did that grind where you go, you travel, and you do well, but it's not gonna pay the bills.
If you're in the top 500 of something,
of anything,
it's insane.
Yeah, and in the world, like he's an incredible player. And but he,
do you know where you were ranked globally?
So when I was like 16 and the 18 and under, I was ranked like 200.
Good
and then,
God,
I mean, I was out here, but I was miserable.
Isn't that crazy too? Miserable. You could be so good at something and be so unhappy doing it.
Oh, because you know what? It was like a drug to me that when I would win, I would feel nothing. And when I would lose, I would be devastated. And when I'd win, I just go, oh, thank God I won.
I see.
Because like the better you get, the more expectations. That's why like top athletes are so fascinating to me because I'm like, they have to be so mentally good. Because like every time Serena goes on the court when she played, if she loses, that's the greatest match that other person's ever played. Like that pressure is crazy. But I think honestly what made me not become Wimbledon is because I have the brain of like, I'm worrying. I'm coming up with funny shit in my head. I'm overthinking stuff. And that's the kind of thing that made me a better comedian.
Yeah.
So the same thing that makes you bad at something.
Make you great at something else.
But it takes balls to be like, just because I'm okay at something doesn't mean it's what I'm meant to do.
That's right. That's a big thing for people. A lot of people get comfortable and be like, I guess this is it.
This is me.
It's like, maybe it is.
You can choose it.
Yeah. So I want to ask you a couple questions. I want to know a time where you were sure you're Buster Douglas, or I should say Duster Bugless. You know who Buster Douglas is?
No idea.
He's the guy that beat Mike Tyson when he wasn't supposed to win and all his mom just died. And they went to Tokyo and thought they were going to wipe the mat literally with him. And they had a rubber glove for his swelling because they weren't expecting him to get his ass beat.
Yeah.
And Buster came in. But this drunk one night in front of Caroline's when I was in New York doing comedy came out to me. And he goes, remember that guy, Duster Bugless. And I named my fantasy football team Duster Bugless. I fucking love it.
All your passwords are Duster Bugless number one.
Duster Bugless number one. Duster Bugless makes me laugh so hard. I couldn't even listen anymore. I just was laughing so hard.
Oh, he was the funniest person in the room, this blackout guy.
Yep. So do you have that moment, that story where you were sure, like, I'm going to fuck this girl or guy up, and then they got you? Do you have one?
I think I remember everything was like going pretty well, but like You know when everything looks okay, but deep down you're simmering, like you could snap at any moment? And I was in the semifinals. I beat this girl the first set.
Is this in college?
This was actually, I was playing an international tournament.
Okay.
And I was like missing home. I was mad at myself, whatever. And me and my coach start fighting after I won the first set because he's like, hit your forehand more. And I was having mental blocks with my forehand. And it gets to the point where you just get so mad at yourself and you're trying so hard. But when your brain is not like doing what you want to do, you feel lost. And I just remember I start tanking. And tanking is like the ultimate no-no in tennis. Tanking means you start purposely losing because I'm so mad at him. I'm so mad at myself.
And they can tell?
Basically, like, I'm just hitting balls out.
Oh, I see.
Like, you're having a full tantrum. You're having a full mental breakdown. I'm crying. One thing about me, I can win tennis matches crying. The amount of matches I've played sobbing, just like,
like winning?
I've won matches crying. Because, like, my coach is yelling at me. I'm not doing what he wants me to do to get better.
I've never won anything crying.
I don't know if it's a skill of women, but, like, I can be bleeding and crying, and I can fucking...
Just crush it out there.
Because, you know, I was not happy. But it's funny. No one was like, maybe we should or shouldn't do this. They're like, keep going, girl. You're doing great.
Push through.
Well, also with sports, it's always like... You don't show emotion. You can't show that you're nervous, you're scared. So you start gaslighting yourself and you're like, I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm not listening to the demons. And then when people are like, do you want to take a break? You're like, no. And then you forget how to listen to your own inner voice that's telling you like, hey, you know, life could be better if you didn't torture yourself every day. But I'm getting all the clout. It's like Hannah Berner. She's great tennis player. But I'm like empty inside and ashamed that I'm not like... that I'm losing to my brain on the court sometimes because I was having performance anxiety and not coping with it well.
So how well did you do in college?
I played number one in college.
You did?
I played number one in college.
Who was your arch rival? Like, who? What person? Are you allowed to say their name?
Let me pull full name. Every year would be different because, like, it would change. But it was only, like, six girls on a team, and it was craziness. And during the week, you were competing for your spot. And then on the weekends,
what do you mean? You weren't locked always.
No.
Every week you're fighting for it.
Yeah, it was non.
Oh shit!
It was nonstop.
It's not like a football or a soccer where like you're the goalie and that's a locked position unless you really fuck up.
It was like pressure all the time, but I just told myself like, if you want to be a champion, you have to deal with it. And I never thought like you don't have to deal with it. But I remember they'd show us like the calendar at the beginning of the year. It showed like every day what we had to do for like a year. And I fucking hated that shit. Like I hated being told where to be, what to do.
Yeah.
I hated rules. But I was suppressing that like creative side of myself that just wanted to be like, let's draw. Let's be silly. I did get in trouble a lot for laughing because I would either cry or laugh.
Yeah. What else is
there? I remember we were at weights at 6 a.m. I started joking around. He goes, Berner, if you giggle one more time, you're doing laps. Of course, I ended up laughing. He had me running the basketball court doing suicides
in
for
front
like
of everybody.
An hour in front of everyone.
Oh, God damn.
And like at the time, I'm like, you stupid dumb bitch. But now I realize like I just needed to cope with like the pain of being stuck in something that I didn't know. And also, I got a full scholarship. So like if I fucked up, my parents would have to pay. So there was a lot of like pressure as a young kid that... you're told pressure's a privilege, but like that shit fucks you up.
Whether you're off to the pool, hiking, or traveling this summer, you're bringing your microbiome with you too. The 38 trillion bacteria that live in and on you, especially your gut, are essential to whole body health. Seed's patented capsule and capsule design means all 24 strains of bacteria survive the journey from shipping to your door through digestion without synthetic or chemical coatings, no refrigeration needed. Not only has every ingredient been tested individually in scientific studies for their safety, dosage, and benefits, the DS01 formulation as a whole has been evaluated in two clinical trials. Support your gut this summer with Seed's DS01 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/honeydew and use code 25honeydew to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DS01 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/honeydew, code 25honeydew. Now, let's get back to the dew.
What were your top three choices for
college?
So my mom went to Cornell.
Oh, she did. Okay.
She wanted me to go there, the Relatable Ivy. And
is that what they call it? The Relatable Ivy. I didn't know that.
I might just made that up. And then
they should steal
Harvard
that.
People would be like, ew. Yeah. And then I was like looking at UPenn too. I was looking at Penn State and Wisconsin. I went on a trip. They show you around campus. And the program was incredible when I went there. Like Russell Wilson was there, if you know, J.J. Watt, Frank Kaminsky. Like it
all
was
the same time while you were there.
It was a crazy year, okay. Like 4 years. Yeah. We went to the Rose Bowl. It was crazy. And I was like, I want to be one of these top athletes. So long story short, my senior year, I got hit by a car.
Nah.
Because the universe has your back, bitch. Nah. The universe is like, you need to sleep.
You got hit by a car?
I swear to God, right before.
Walking or like out of a car or in your car?
6 a.m. I'm walking to weights and it's like 2 degrees outside.
Doing the right thing by yourself.
Trying to be a good student athlete. And I had a hood on with fur and I didn't see the car coming and they hit me. And the first thing I said.
On your right side?
On my right side.
Did you roll up? What happened?
I was thrown. And it's funny because I actually didn't make any money from it because it was someone saw that I was walking on like not a walk signal. But the guy, I was already halfway across the street. Like he definitely didn't know. Whatever. Long story short, I'm over it. But the first thing I said to the police or whoever came, I was like, tell my coach I'm going to be late. Like I was just so scared that I was going to get in trouble. And then I got back for like all Big Ten, like the Big Ten season. But my whole thing was being fast. And like I was like 0.3 seconds slower than I was, and I lost a bunch of matches in tiebreakers. And it was one of these things where I just was like, you know what? I feel like the universe is telling me not to do this anymore. And it was so fucking, it was the longest relationship I've ever had. It was like the worst breakup you've ever had. And then you're sitting there like, I didn't end up going pro. I don't know what I'm passionate about. Why did I do torture myself for 20 years?
Did you graduate?
Yeah.
So you did play all four years?
I did all 4 years.
Okay, you played.
But. And actually my last semester, because you're on scholarship, they have you like work a little. So I did some sports broadcasting because I liked athletes. And I remember being on camera and being like, okay, this is kind of fun. And I learned how to edit. So I would do some like, you could even search like Hanna-Barbera, Wisconsin. And I'm like interviewing like the basketball team and stuff. But to admit that you like want to be on camera is like, I think a hard step. It's like, oh, you want attention? So I kind of, and they were like, oh, if you want to be a sports reporter, you got to go to a small town. And I was like, I want to go back to New York and be with my family. So I just went back to New York and said goodbye to my dreams.
So we were talking about this before. Like, I always wonder about these athletes that give their whole childhood, high school, college years to this sport, hoping. Now, tennis is one that you could go and play in your 20s, 30s and make gazillions of dollars. But I always think about Olympians. Like, what the fuck are you doing after you play second in the javelin?
That shit gets me so emotional.
What are you doing?
There's a documentary
about it.
Give your
whole life to that.
There's a documentary about, like you lose by 0.002 seconds. And they're like, oh, if you got it, you would have had a spot. Even the people who win, they get sponsors for 2 years and it's done. It's
like Mary Lou Retton, people like these that were like American heroes for Olympics. Where are you at now?
And you know their body hurts.
Yeah.
It's funny though, like if I'm going to cry, sports stuff makes me cry. You ever see an Instagram of like a girl losing a race and then she like trips and then she comes back and wins? Like that shit gets me fucked up. I'm sobbing. But like something about like cancer happens, I'm like, okay, it happens. That's life. But like sports, like someone who's like.
The autistic kid coming off the bench just hitting three.
Oh my God. That gets me every time.
That kid coming
at me. I said, oh, his dreams came true. I believe in the world. I believe in God. It's beautiful.
Nothing makes me cry like an autistic kid hitting a three. You know what I'm saying?
No,
off the bench, the equipment manager. You got clean towels and hitting threes.
Oh, my God. And then they win the game and everyone's holding them up.
Everybody runs.
And I think, honestly, I fucking cared too much about sports. Like, I cared so much that it almost, so it made me like, I put too much pressure on myself, where I feel like comedy was a thing that like my parents weren't behind and no one knew about, that I was like, it's kind of crazy I'm even on stage. So I had such a different perspective, where tennis, whenever I walked on the court, I'm like, I need to win because this is who I am and this is all I have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fucking hard to play free with
that
mentality.
So how do you walk away from that? What happens when you say, I'm hanging up my racket?
I went from like being captain of the team to doing cold calling sales in New York City.
Just calling what for what?
Selling digital marketing. And my dad was one of those dads. He's in sales and he's like, you want to be successful? You got to do cold call sales.
Oh, he retired from tennis coach.
Oh, he was always doing both. Okay, I don't know how he worked during it. I'm like, did you ever work? But it is a lot of athletes go into sales because it's like competitive. You get that excitement of like the highs and the lows of competition. But I was like, I feel like I just went from tennis to this, where like I was miserable, but I was like making money, like I was pretty good at it. And then I quit it and I went into marketing because I was like, I want to be creative, and that shit is boring as fuck. No offense, I appreciate the
especially
art of
when
it.
People don't listen to your ideas.
Well, yeah, because you'll be like, I want
to
do this.
Isn't it interesting how when we've gotten to a point in our lives where we don't have to listen to other people's ideas and shit, things start going good? Hannah Berner. Hey, like this.
It's the most empowering shit ever.
That's all we need, guys.
All I want to do is make my own mistakes.
$15,000 is showing up your ass. That's all we need.
All I want to do is let me make the mistake.
That's it.
I can live with that.
Yeah.
And... yeah, I didn't know I wanted to, but tennis is pretty entrepreneurial. So I wanted to show that like I could be a corporate baddie.
But let's talk about real money for a second. Like you said, you could be whatever, 70th or what. What number could you actually make a living? Top 20, top 30? Like,
you
where
have to
you
be
making?
Like top 100.
Okay.
To be making money,
which is insane.
And
I mean,
to get
insane.
To top 100, you have to play so many tournaments to get there.
Oh, so there's a whole thing you have to do to be...
Yeah, you don't just like win one match and become... Like, you have to start with small tournaments and then slightly bigger tournaments, then you qualify for other... It's a whole process, and it's actually a thing like they're working on because they know there's an issue. And then also, you're competing... If you're competing against the top people, these people went on a private jet. They have a masseuse.
They've slept for 10
hours. They've slept for 10 hours. Yeah. They're fucking injecting themselves with, you know. Yeah. Meanwhile, you're like dying. You were in economy. And you're dehydrated. You're scared. You don't even have your coach because you can't afford him to come. And you're expected to try to beat them. So there's this like wide range of, it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard to break through. But I guess I just always thought like, if you try hard enough, your dreams will come true. So it was kind of sad being like, oh, like, damn it. I tried really hard. I worked my ass off. I wanted it. I was good.
And you were great. Yeah.
And I did well.
Yeah.
And I like my dreams didn't come true. So I was kind of like a little pissed at life. I was pissed at the world
for
a bit.
I would be too. You put all that time and dedication to something and you're great at it. And like now it's just like, and okay, and it's over.
I literally remember crying, going, why?
Why?
You know, you like look in the mirror and you're like, why?
Why is
why,
good?
Why? And then I remember everyone's, what the fuck?
It is a what the fuck, though. I just gave my whole life to hit this goddamn
ball. There's
some
moments in life where you're just like, I was like, I really did not have to do that. Like, I would have done something different.
There's a joke by a comedian, shame on me, he's an older comedian, he's a black dude back from like the 70s or whatever, mm-hmm. He had glasses and a mm-hmm. beard, he was in Car Wash, you would definitely know if you saw him, mm-hmm. I wish I could remember his name, but he had a whole bit about being an Olympian and training your whole fucking life and busting your ass, legit, putting time and effort in and coming in last place, and he's just jogging and he's talking out loud to himself like, I could have done nothing and come in last, you know what I mean, all the money and time and effort I put into coming in last, and other people, yeah, but you still got the Olympics. You don't give a fuck. Like you as a person, like I don't give a fuck.
Because you not only lost, you've embarrassed your family. You've embarrassed your country. Your entire country shuns you.
A little bit about talking.
You have to go into witness protection.
Like, you fucking dumb fuck. You thought you could win?
And every race, someone's last.
Yeah,
That's fucked race. Up. Mm-hmm. That's fucked up.
Someone who's good is last.
Yeah. Someone who like doesn't speak to their family, sacrificed all their everything.
Irregular periods, all of it.
Lost the period.
Yeah, no more periods, all of it.
Shot up with cortisone. They'll never walk the same. Can't get pregnant.
Yeah, they're fucking last. They're last. Yeah.
Someone told me once, they were like, you can find greatness in like anywhere. And that kind of, I remember that once because I was like, you have to get gold or like you have to win US Open. Like that's greatness. And I remember they're like, no, like look across the street, like people playing pickleball, like there's greatness happening and people having a conversation. Like there's greatness everywhere. And it's funny when you're younger, I feel like you love the little things. And then getting older is like trying to find the little things again that you like. Mm-hmm. Not to be all like... and Drew Huberman, but like you're trying to, you realize it's not about those like crazy huge things. But yeah. It's funny, once I chilled out, then I started to see like actually what I enjoyed and what I was good at.
And did you go into any sort of like, I mean, depression or anything like that? You did.
Oh, yeah.
So what'd you use to come out of it? Was comedy like what really saved you then? Or are you...
You know it was really bad because at one point I almost became a yoga instructor. If any of your friends say they want to become a yoga instructor, call 911. They have no hope. They want to do stretching for a living. Also, I can't even touch my toes. And I was like, I'm going to be a yoga instructor. I was going to sign up to one of those retreats.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
So
why did you feel lost? Were you just trying anything?
I was literally throwing shit at the wall, being like, I like to coach people. I like to move my body. I want peace and love. Like, it's dark shit when you're like, I want to become a yoga teacher. It's like therapists. Like, no one becomes a therapist having a good time.
But there's also no therapist who can relate to you. What therapist has ever been at the top of their game at a fucking tennis or a pro sport that can go, hey, I understand what you're going through.
I looked for like sports psychologists tennis that just understood that shit, because it actually is so common, this identity crisis after the sport, because you're basically like, first of all, I'm a loser. Second of all, who am I? So I actually had like no job, but I remembered these old sports casting videos that I did. It was on YouTube, and I was like selling t-shirts or something. I was like 25, and I was like hating my job, and I saw one of these old videos, and I was like, you know, I want to do video. I just like said that, and I started telling everyone like, I want to do video. Like, I didn't even know what that meant. And this like one of my friends was like, hey, this company's looking for a video producer with like 5 years experience. And I was like, oh, I don't have 5 years experience, but it was like this like millennial girl company that does funny memes and tweets and videos. And I was like, I'm just gonna apply with some examples and ideas I have. And they were like, hey, we like your ideas, like you're funny and you're the demographic. let's put you on freelance. And I remember thinking, like, I felt like a horse that finally got in the right lane. I was like, wait, let's fucking go. And it was like boot camp. They told me I would get like $20 a tweet. I started like joke writing, where I was just trying to write tweets. I started to make some videos, and I started meeting comics in New York City and hiring them to act in these funny videos. Mm-hmm. I was directing. I was like, wait, you can do this as a career? Like, be silly as a career? And then I was like, wait, you could go to work and laugh and not cry the whole time? And that was like, my life changed. And I wasn't even thinking of stand-up at the time.
Right.
Yeah.
At that time, you're probably not making any money at first, and you're just
doing this living with my parents.
You're loving it, and you have a passion for
it. Oh my God, I remember thinking, I want to do this job forever. I was like, I never want to lose this job. And I did. I got fired from the job.
How? How'd you get fired?
Because I said yes to a reality TV show.
Oh, you did? And they were like, you're out of here.
They were like, absolutely not. They're like, no. And I was like, but this is my favorite job ever. I love it. But I from there, I started podcasting. I started interviewing. Like, this job was, it really was a comedy boot camp. And I fell in love with, like, I would get paid no money to do that. Like, and I think once you find that, like, that's power.
Also, back then, too, you're in college and they're not paying the athletes back then. There's no portal transfers and things like that. You're making $0.
It was scary.
Are you on like a stipend? Or?
Yeah, you have a stipend. Yeah. And they would be like, if you're late to anything, you could get kicked off the team because that's you like breaking your contract. So like every day, I remember once I slept in accidentally.
God forbid.
I lost my mind because like he didn't kick me off the team because I was one of the like good players, but if he wanted to, he could have. It's like a lot of, and he's trying to feed his family, the coach. Mm-hmm. He has crazy pressure because these big establishments. So when I was like, wait, we're all just fucking goofing around, no one's yelling at anyone.
Mm-hmm.
It was I always had a goofy side that I was suppressing during tennis, and I like to tell people, like, just because you're good at one thing does not mean you can't be good at other shit. It's just your brain that's limiting you from what you could do.
Yeah, I agree. So what would you say? Do you have any lessons from tennis that you carry over into life and stand up? Like, what do you appreciate about that?
So with my stand up, I had started this podcast called Burning in Hell, where I talk to people about, yeah, like some of their dark times. Like, I was like obsessed with that, like you, because I was meeting people who are successful and I was like, they must be miserable too.
Yeah.
Like, I want to know your dark shit. Mm-hmm. I love that shit. And I started doing it, and Caroline's actually reached out and was like, do you want to do a live podcast? And one of my comedy friends was like, I dare you to do 10 minutes of stand-up. So that's not...
You'd never done it.
Never done stand-up. Wow. She wasn't a stand-up, because a stand-up would have never told me to do 10 minutes of comedy.
No, we wouldn't. I was like, 10. They were like three to five tops.
She goes, why don't you open the show 10 minutes of stand-up? You have so many tweets. You have so many like bits you've written. And I remember thinking like... okay. And I had sold it out, so like 300 people. And I remember right before the show, this is also like ignorance. Like, any stand up would have been like, this is a bad idea. This is not what you do. This is horrible. But I had that kind of like ignorance is bliss of like, I didn't have any rules in my head telling me what was wrong or not. But I remember right before I stepped on, I go, oh my God, what if it hits me again? And I get in my head again, and I get that feeling with tennis where I can't perform and I disappoint everyone. And I remember right before I went on stage, I was like, we'll see what happens. I get on stage, and immediately, like, a calmness hits me that I never had on the court.
Mm.
Ever. Like, people would talk to me about like, oh yeah, you're nervous, but you get on the court and you hit a couple balls, you're good. I would always be fucking so in my head. I felt like I was talking to my friends at brunch, and I felt this freedom. And then at the end of the show, people were like, our favorite part was this, what you did in the beginning, whatever form of stand-up I was doing. And I had some stand-up friends that were there, and they were like, if you want to do this right, I don't know why I give them that voice. They're like, if you want to do this right, you got to start, you know, saying yes to every show, you know, doing spots as much as you can, like basements, whatever. And I just remember being like, okay, like I kind of found another fire again. Cause I'm a little masochistic. Like I wanted to chase something again and grind a little. Yeah. So I took kind of the work ethic, I think, from tennis with the more less ego. Cause with comedy, I'm like, it's cool I'm even out here. Well, at the time I was like, I did have like a whole career before me, but I was basically like, I'm not going to be hard on myself. I'm not going to make this torture. I'm going to do this thing for me.
Yeah.
And if it's not fun, I'll stop.
I mean, good for you for figuring that out. Like I said, you probably know people in tennis that might have been similar to you and just kept going because what else am I going to do? You know what I mean? For you to take something at the height of it and be so good and say, nah, and then go back to like zero.
Yeah.
And then it's because it's not like you went, I'm going to shut this down and go do this.
I have a passion. I have a big job in this.
You got to figure it out.
Yeah. I think they call it like the whispers where like something's telling you like you don't want to do this. But then you can't tell if
I wish I had more of those. Oh, where are those? I wish I had screams. Hey, man. Hey, don't do that shit.
Smoke signal. Okay.
Yeah.
But then sometimes you think it's like people be like, never quit. Like, you know, Gary Vee is like, wake up at 5 a.m. and never quit. So you're fighting those two things of like, I don't want to be a quitter, but also I'm pretty sure they don't weigh this anymore, but I want to be a quitter. And I'm not out here trying to tell everyone to quit, but like life is too short to do stuff you don't enjoy.
Reassess.
I feel the same about like relationships. I feel the same about a lot of things where it's like, you're not stuck in anything. And look, you could go back if you want. I could go back. I could be a pickleball pro if I wanted right now. I could do it. So I felt the freedom. And then comedy, I was like, you got a little high. And also, I would never... With tennis, you're a loser. Like, you could be like, oh, I learned... No, you lost. You lost to that person. You try to beat them and you lost. It's very intense. Where comedy, I'm like, I'm expressing myself, trying to bring some joy. Maybe I don't do well. You know, I'll change that joke. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's, I like that I had the balls to try that joke. Like, it's all, to me, I was like, this is
somebody's
art.
Not in the crowd if it doesn't happen and go, nope, that's one strike for you, Hannah. Nope.
Your dad's disappointed in you.
Your dad hated that when I got him on FaceTime.
Boo.
Okay, wait, can I ask you, how young are you?
When I started?
No, right now, if you don't mind. You don't have to say.
I'm 32.
All right. Do you still go out on the court? Do you still fuck around at all?
So I do now.
Can you, are you happy doing it? You know what I mean? Do you still beat yourself up a little bit?
It took me like 6 years.
To pick a racket up again?
Yes. I also did like a full gym strike, they call it. A lot of athletes do it where like you don't go to the gym. Because I would go to the gym and get emotional. Because I was like, you're a fucking loser. What are you training for? We're training to fucking walk to the coffee shop. Like, what are we doing? Like, you used to work out
before.
Yeah. So I'd run on the treadmill for 8 minutes and have to leave. Like, it was fucking sad, but no one really understood either. They were like, just run on the treadmill, you stupid bitch. And I was like, but it's fucking, I'm a loser. Like, lift some weights, and I'm like, but it's like,
for
to
what?
Do what?
For
what? Because, yeah, I wasn't trying to lose weight. Like, I just was like, I'm a fucking loser.
Man, what a great perspective if you're a former athlete. I wish I could just carry that into my regular Joe where I'll lift some weights. For what?
For what?
For what?
I go, you're all just pretending. What are we pretending to be? Yeah, right. You fucking fake ass motherfuckers. I was trying to be a professional.
What are you using those muscles for? Yeah.
Literally. So
was your one arm so much bigger than the other arm, too?
It might still be. This arm might be a little bigger. I don't know.
A tiny bit.
But was back it then it
considerable
was.
Considerable before.
But not like a Federer, because I had a two-handed backhand. But I started hitting again with some like other former players, and it would be very like just hitting, just chilling, no competition. It was like a... you had to desensitize yourself to it. You like put your foot in and be like, ooh. And it's funny because now like I'm really into it again, and I'm trying to like re-coach myself where like I'm actually like working on my forehand right now, which used to give me a lot of issues. And I'm like, okay, we've no pressure. Let's actually try to like change some stuff the way you want to change it. I think with tennis, what I didn't like at the time was I didn't like that there was rules. I didn't like people telling me how I should hit the ball. I didn't trust what they were telling me. And then my body and mind wasn't in on it. Where stand up, There's no rules.
There's no notes.
Oh my God.
No. Hey,
I go
here,
on stage,
here,
do whatever the fuck I want. And I couldn't do that with tennis. You had to keep the ball
on the
lines.
Way to get good at stand up is to fail, right?
I can fail really well.
Yeah.
I can fucking fail.
But if you fail at tennis, you're fucking done.
You're not playing
you're
next
done.
Match.
You're done.
You're crying.
You're done.
You're crying. So it's funny. There's so many similarities. You're in a fetal position crying for your mom. Yeah. Full adults. You've broken every racket. So it's funny. There's similarities, but then like stark differences to the two that I think I'm like grateful. So even though like I'm young in comedy, I'm kind of like, look, I've had this other career that I've been through.
A full on career.
Yeah. And I do think with kids, like, I don't know if I want to give my kid that much pressure at a young age. Because it is fun, though, to be like, my kid's talented. But, like, you miss out on some of the, like, little joys. Because it was always just like, how do I get better? How do I get better? Mm-hmm. But that psychotic drive has been fun for me as a comic to, like, see, like, oh, I got better today. Oh, I figured that one out.
Yeah, I figured that one out. It's fun.
Yeah, because I'm still the same person. I just... Yeah. There's like a stupid Instagram video of a girl and it's like sometimes you're doing the wrong thing at soccer and she like kicks a soccer ball and whiffs it and it's like embarrassing. And she goes to the back of the line and does like two backward cartwheels and it's like you just are not doing what you're supposed to do. Yeah,
you just
could have been your daughter doing gymnastics.
Dude, I watch that stuff. I'm so fascinated by gymnastics because the only gymnastics I've ever seen is Olympics.
Yeah.
Where it's like, wow. Look at her.
How do you even know you could do that?
Yep. And now I'm watching how they learn how to do it. And they'll just be like, you bent your leg, straighten your leg and kick it. And it's mechanics. It's literally just like there physics. It goes. And I'm over there going.
And she's chucking herself around the.
Yeah. Miss, I turn around. She's on the coffee table jumping. I'm like, what are you fucking? I'm like that shit can't
monkey.
Take your weight. It can't take your weight. She's like, it can. I'm like, it can't. It can't take your weight.
She's a fucking pretzel. You're like, can you untie yourself at dinner?
I'm like, it's actually furniture. It's not good shit. Trust me. You're going through it.
No, that gymnastics is another one. That's just you and your brain. And these girls have to be so strong.
And then they go up there and they get judged and it's, you know.
Oh, they literally don't even try to pretend they're not judging. Yeah. They're like, we are your judges.
Yeah.
And it's scary. Mm-hmm. It's scary, but I'm still working on like when I know people are watching. It's like comedy where like the comics are watching you. It's like staying in your zone. And that's how I always felt with tennis. Like I always felt watched and I couldn't just be free. Mm-hmm. And comedy, I've gotten better at like focusing on just like the moment. Because you can't be overthinking when you're on stage sometimes. Your brain has to be quiet.
It doesn't matter. If you're really in like in the zone of stand-up and you come in with this list of shit to say and some shit goes down in that audience, that list of shit's out the fucking window. You know what I mean? You can't just be powered through that shit if this lady's having a heart attack or this guy's choking or someone's drunk and yelling at you. You can't be like, everyone shut up because I have this prepared list. Of shit I need to do. That ain't how it goes.
It is so funny to me when sometimes comics get mad at the crowd because they're like trying to work on something. I'm like, don't fight the waves, bro.
That's it, bro.
Don't fight the ocean.
It's rough seas tonight, man. Just go with it.
You're in a fucking kayak and you're going down.
Yeah. Thank you for doing this. This has been awesome. This is a great episode.
You're such a good listener. You let me fucking go off, but it was very therapeutic for me at least.
That's nice of you to say. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Before I have you promote one more time, let me ask you what I ask everyone their first time is advice you would give to 16-year-old Hannah Berner. What would you say to your 16-year-old self?
That you're not failing. Like you're not failing, you're not messing up, like you're living, you're experimenting, you're researching.
And this is a girl who's crushing it at tennis right now too at 16, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're fucking good.
I would also like if I was like a little able to tell the future, I'd just be like, you have no fucking clue what else you're capable of. And just like trust that it's there and you're gonna be okay.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. Promote everything one more time.
Oh, yeah.
Please.
Go to Netflix right now. We Ride at Dawn if you want to giggle a little bit. And check out my pod Burner Phone or Giggly Squad.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ryan.
As always, Ryan Sickler on all your social media. Come see me on tour. Tickets are up on my website for all shows at ryansickler.com. We'll talk to y'all next week.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.